Okay, good evening. So, welcome to this new series of teaching. I was looking at the sign out there. Oh, my title seems very long. So maybe I start by explaining what on earth I'm planning to do. Just to give you some idea. So then people that come late, they will know what is happening. Yeah. I entitled this series, which is make up of a few short courses. I call it Experiencing the Buddha's Teaching. So why such a funny title is because having studied Buddhism for almost 30 years now. So and Buddhism is one of those religion or philosophy that if you want to study, there are lots of things to study. Every year, scholars come out with new translations, old translation, and then they go and translate it again, then they write commentaries and different kind of things. So there are tons of words, tons of material available to study. And so quite often, out of the 30 years of my life learning about Buddhism, a lot of it is spent studying and also sitting exams. I never imagined I would ever take another examination after I finished the Singapore education system. I still remember my last exam in university. I said, this is it. No more examination for me. My entire life spent sitting exams. And lo and behold, I went to study 7 years in the master program of Buddhist philosophy. And there are lots and lots of exams. And every week, there is a quiz. Every single week, there is a quiz. Can you imagine? There's more examination. So there's a lot of studying. But the thing about studying is we gather intellectual information. Then after a while, after a few years, you realize that yes, you have a lot of words in the head, you know, and you can talk as if you really know what Buddhism is all about. But if you look at your own behavior, nothing seems to change, you know. Same old person. Just as angry, just as petty, just as miserly, all the old habits are untouched. You just manage to maybe brush a veneer. You know, you can say things in a nicer sounding way with technical Buddhist terms. That's it. Fundamentally, there is no much change. And that defeats the purpose of studying Buddhism. At least for me, the whole idea of learning about Buddhism is to try to change, try to make myself happier. I'm searching for happiness through Buddhism. Yeah. Not sure whether it's advisable or not, but anyway, that's what I was doing. Yeah. So that's why I thought it might be nice to have a series of courses to explore this topic of not only about studying the Buddha's teaching, but how can I experience the Buddha's teaching? So in the sense that I can see what the Buddha has taught, what the great Buddhist masters have talked about, I can see also in my own experience, in my own life, in my interaction with others, I can see some positive change. Maybe I'm becoming happier. You know, that would be wonderful, isn't it? Yeah. So, and then in the teaching, there is the whole explanation of how to get there. Because that's the whole idea of the Buddhist teaching. You know, it's to liberate us from our suffering and the causes of suffering. So it's something very practical. So I thought maybe, you know, we can explore together in a few courses throughout this year the different aspects of the Buddhist teaching and emphasizing on how we can actually bring about a change within ourselves, bring about some real experiences within ourselves. So maybe I'll give you an example. So there are some chairs hidden at the back. If you want chairs, you can pull those chairs out there. And usually the first row is empty. For example, what do I mean by experiencing the Buddha's teaching? For example, I might have someone that, let's say, this is the real story, with all the details, the personal details hidden away. someone that I have been working with in the past, and I find her difficult to work with. Sometimes she really make me very angry. Once she did something to me, I was angry. Then I went to bed, feeling very angry. And usually for me, if I were to fall asleep, the next morning I would wake up. I would have forgotten about it. This time round, no. I woke up, I was just as angry at this person. I remember lying in bed and saying, oh no, this is serious. Doesn't mean that I was angry throughout my sleep, even in my dream. I was just angry at this person. It was very long-lasting anger. So I said, well, being a Buddhist teacher, at least someone who has been talking about Buddhism, this will not do. I must do something about it. So I didn't even manage to get up to sit in meditation posture. Just lying in bed, in the comfort of my bed, under the doona, and it's time to meditate. Why am I so angry at this person? I bring the person to mind, and we will do some of these things during the course. I try to find out, how can I change this anger? How can I be free of this anger that is actually causing me more suffering? Because the anger is inside my own mind, my own heart. And then for some reason, I managed to think a bit differently. There is a shift in perspective. Because I do know this person. And one moment I was thinking, this is such a nasty person. The next moment, I sort of remember that this person is also a very unhappy person. Has gone through a lot of difficulties in life, a lot of suffering. And overall, it's just unhappy. And when we are unhappy, when we are miserable, we tend to drag other people down with us. We tend to drag other people down, make other people miserable. Unintentionally, but it's just where we are at. Yeah. So that instant when I see this person, who's actually a friend, as a very unhappy person, something shifts, something quite dramatically shifts within my own experience. So one moment I was burning with anger. I don't know whether you're familiar with, the anger that's literally like a fire. All your blood vessels dilate and you really feel hot. That heat starts to dissipate. But the anger is literally going away. And a different feeling come up, a feeling of compassion. That wow, that would be such an unhappy person. I wouldn't want to be in her shoes because it would be so miserable to have gone through all those difficult experiences in life and all the challenges. And so anger is replaced with a little bit of compassion. And in so doing, I set myself free from that anger. I think this one, I haven't done so badly. So subsequently, I never get as angry at her. Alright, so that compassion, a little bit of it kind of stay with me. So this is an experience. This is not an intellectual thing. The intellectual thing is when people say, oh, I should be compassionate, I should. Don't worry about the should, okay? You can shoot yourself 100 times, you will still be the same, I should be like this, I should. Because I explain Buddhism. I heard a lot about all this should, right? People tell me, I should meditate, I should do it every day. Okay. Look, forget about the should. Didn't get you there, it ain't going to get you there. So forget about the should is up in the head. But the feeling, the shift in the feeling is up down in the heart. That is an actual experience. And when you have an actual experience, it changes you. And that's what I'm interested in. How can we catalyze this kind of changes for ourselves? So that is one example of what I mean by experiencing the Buddha's teaching. Transform concepts, ideas, and all the should and should not into actual experiences within ourselves. And there's a big title. Then there's a lot of words, I can't remember what I said. But then that build, break it up into modules. So this first module is called, preparing the foundation. Preparing the foundation as in, there are certain things that we can do that can help us to increase the chances for us to have new experiences. Right. So that's what we are going to look at in this next few weeks. Right. So far, okay, can you hear me? I'm pretty loud, yeah. So, And experiencing the Buddha's teaching, sometimes people call it realization, gaining realization. Realization, you can understand it as making real what is previously just theoretical, information, intellectual. You make it into real experiences, real changes. So that is, in Buddhism we talk about realization. It's a big word, so don't use it too often, okay? Oh, I just have a realization last weekend. Yeah. Then people say, oh, are you sure? Yeah. So you should use it sparingly. And I like to present to people a way of looking at realization so that it doesn't look so big, so far away. If you listen to people in the Buddhist circle, if you unfortunately encounter some of these people, unfortunately, they will tell you that you will never, ever gain a realization. Because you're not Tibetan, you didn't shave your head, you didn't wear funny robes around you, you just didn't look very special. Okay? And realization is only for special people. Not for us ordinary people, ordinary souls. It's not for us. Okay? So, what I do is, let's look at it differently. So if realization is so rare and so special and really floating up there, let's look at it a bit differently. Let's use a different word. So I like to present realization, which is what we are aiming for, as a shift in perspective. I used this word previously. Shift in perspective. One moment you look at this person from this angle in this way, the next moment you see this person in a different way. Same person, but somehow appear differently. And because you see this person differently, the way the person appears to you looks different. Then it triggers a different set of thoughts. It brings up a different set of feelings, right? Different way of thinking, different way of feeling. And therefore you also respond differently. When you act or react differently to this person. And before you know it, something has changed. So you are left behind old ways, old habits of reacting, and you have developed a new habit, new way of behaving, a new way of responding. So that's why I like to present realization as a shift in perspective. Or in case you say I shouldn't use the word realization, then we can discover it. Now all we are doing in this course is we are shifting perspective. Shifting perspective. One moment you see this person as unlovable. No one will love such a nasty person. The next moment you say, actually, there's something lovable about this person. Yeah. Just a little bit. So there's a shift. And of course, the most profound shift in perspective, according to the Buddha's teaching, is the realization that of, sometimes we call it selflessness or emptiness. One moment you think that there is something called self here, very precious, very important. So that not only do we want it to live well in this life, we want to make sure that next life things will still go well for this self of mine. And this self is supposed to be unchanging, permanent, independent. We really want everything to go well for this self. So that's one of the fundamental things in Buddhism that we try to work with. Is considered a form of ignorance, a kind of mistaken idea. And we transform it, and we have a different perspective. Which sounds scary when you describe it, that there isn't any self here. And so sometimes I say, we will look at this in today's call, but don't take it too personally. But sometimes we take it personally means everything that you say happened has something to do with me, right? And when you're able to let that go, you don't take it too personally, then you find that it's actually much easier for you to respond to the situation. Much easier to let go of your anger, your anxiety, and so on. So this is another type of realization or shift in perspective. Okay. Alright, so preparing the foundation. So what I want to cover in the, I can't remember how many weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, is different aspects of different types of favorable conditions we can create for ourselves, so that when we study Buddhism, we reflect on it, we meditate on it, we can easily get some positive results out of it. So in the teaching, there are quite a few, listed quite a few things that we put for us to pay attention to, so I want to go through that. And in Buddhism, we say that the way we bring about change, we go through a three-step process. The first step is, traditionally, it's called listening. I don't know whether you know about the history of Buddhism, but in the early days, nothing was written down. Everything is by oral. So the way you get information or you learn is to listen, right? To listening. These days, of course, no. You can listen, you can watch YouTube videos, and then you can podcast. Now, of course, you have all sorts of different printed materials and things like that. So these days, we don't only listen, but we can read. Next time, maybe there's virtual reality or things like that. You can immerse yourself. So these days, we use the word study or learn. So the first step is study. Study the Buddha's teaching, study some of the information, the knowledge. This is the first step. Studying, like what you are doing here, listening to what my explanation is, a step in, of studying, of learning, as a predominantly passive process, especially in Singapore. Because nobody say anything, right? So, blah, 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 1.5 hours, yeah? Maybe the mic wasn't working, they didn't hear a single word, they didn't sit there and say anything. So, not much audience participation. And sometimes, I don't want to be too cruel to people, you know, because when I was teaching in Sydney, I taught in Sydney many years, and I asked my teaching colleague, you know, how do you encourage audience participation? She's German. She said, well, I told them, take a few seconds, think of a question, and then I will point to you, and you will ask that question. I thought, wow, that sounds very, very stressful, you know? What do you come to a Buddhist class to de-stress? Then now you have to, just a few seconds, come up with a intelligent sounding question. Right? Because the worst thing is to ask a question that people thought, gee, what a stupid question that is. Right? Well, I never do that. But you're most encouraged to participate. You know, you can raise your hand, you can interrupt me, you can ask questions, or give me your feedback and comment. Yeah. Not to worry, but I've been teaching for many years, so I've grown a very thick skin. I told the students that they can give me positive feedback, but no constructive criticism. Because I'm just not up to dealing with it yet. But now you can give me all sorts of criticism, it's fine. I think it's just your problem, not mine. So, please feel free to interrupt me and raise your hand if you have any questions. Okay? Because I'm pretty good at monologuing, going on and on. Okay, so what are some of the favorable conditions we're going to look at this call? First is, I was talking about studying. Yeah, so we normally do studying, and then there's the second step is called reflecting. So this is a favorable condition also to reflect, to think about the teaching in relation to yourself. Most people never do it. I know, because I also never do it. I just write things down. These days, people learn the lessons. I used to have notebooks. You know. I attend all this Buddhist class, and I write in the notebook. And when one finish one notebook, what do you do? You put it on the shelf, and you start the next one, right? Or some people, they have a few bags, so they have a few notebooks. So one session is on this notebook, and the other session is on the other notebook. So at the end of many years, you have a collection of notebooks. I never, ever refer to it. Never go back to look at it. So after a while, you just set it to recycle or to burn. Yeah. So I never actually, in the early days, engage in this second step of reflective thinking. What it means is to think about what you heard in relation for yourself. Is this true? Do I agree with it? What is the person saying? What are the implications of what this person has been talking about? To really think about it, to process it, to digest it. And I can understand, why I or others don't do it. It takes a lot of energy. It does. Because it's easy to just, let's say there's an examination of what I'm teaching, you just memorize, you know, whatever, and you just regurgitate it out. But it takes a bit of effort. But there is, at least you just repeat what you have heard. But if you were to sit down and think about it for yourself, it takes even more mental energy. But it is a necessary step. So you have to ask yourself, do I agree with it? Do I believe in it? What does it really mean? Do I really understand it? What are the implications of this teaching on my life, on what I'm doing? Yeah. So there's this second step, which is quite often neglected. Yeah. But never mind. And then the third step is having thought through and agree with what you have learned, then we need to meditate on it. That is when we need to familiarize ourselves with the material. You must really know it so well that it actually becomes a new habit. Something happens and you automatically respond in this new way. So that is the third step, meditation. Most of us, what we do is we study and we sort of so-called jump and then we go and meditate. Like what I'm going to ask you to do, talk, okay, let's meditate. Right. So no thinking in between, right? We just jump over thinking. But actually, what happened is, when you meditate, you probably would be prompted to think about it. Because you say, Wai Chong, I don't know what you're talking about. What are you asking me to meditate on? How to do this, how to do that? So naturally, if you don't understand it, it will stimulate you to think about it. Yeah. Okay. So meditation is to build a deeper habit, a new habit, so that you can start to respond in this new way. And you can let go of your old habits that are not helpful or that might be, even be harmful to you. This is the process. And the favorable conditions can help us to move smoothly from studying to thinking, reflecting, to meditating, until we can see a real change within ourselves. But what do you think are some of the favorable conditions? Audience participation. What are the favorable conditions that bring about this change? Anybody? Some of you have studied Buddhism for a long time. I'm sure you can come up with something. No worries, even no right and wrong. What do you think? What are some of the favorable conditions that help a person to transform what they have studied into an actual experience? When you think about it, nothing at all? Introspection. Okay. What do you mean by introspection? Can you elaborate a little bit? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So sometimes maybe we study some teachings and then we can look back at our own experiences, you know, although I never do, there's this advice to, at the end of the day, you look back on what you've done throughout the day and all the good things, and the good things you rejoice, the bad things you sort of regret, you know, I just fall asleep. Yeah. too tired, you know, to think too much. Yeah. But yeah, that's interesting to reflect back on your experiences. See whether there's some kind of relationship with the teaching. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Any other? Analyze the situation. Yeah. So that is also like about the second step, thinking, you know, applying our thinking, analyze the situation based on what we learned from the teaching. Yeah. Yeah. You need to do a lot of rehearsal. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I would never use because it's a big word. I wouldn't even be able to pronounce it. But yeah. So there is definitely part of familiarization is like to repeat, and to, so that you get used to, you become familiar with a new way of responding, a new way of thinking about the situation. And yeah, but I mean, sometimes it takes a long time for us to change. So if you stay on the same thing, you will feel that 10 years passing, you're still on the same thing. Yeah. So I think sometimes it's okay to spend a little bit of time summarizing and then move on to the next topic. And then later you come all the way back to the beginning and start again. Yeah. And also, in the meantime, you have new life experiences, new learning, and that can enrich your understanding. It's not uncommon for people to, after studying or practicing for 10 years, then suddenly realize, I've been doing it wrongly. I've been memorizing it. I got some instruction wrong. For example, I give you this example. When I first started learning meditation, I learned about this technique called counting the breath, right? So I just read the title, count the breath. Or count very easy, right? 1, 2, 3, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100. I'm doing very well. 200, 500, I got up to 700. And then once I got up to 900, then I went back and looked at the instructions. It says count from 1 to 10 and start from 1 again. Yeah? Right. So, alright. I just go back and so I familiarized myself with the wrong technique. Yeah. But it's quite stimulating because you have a goal. Count more breaths. I don't know why I want to do that, but yeah. So sometimes we stay with a practice for a while, and then we move on because life changes, and later when we come back to that practice, we bring new understanding and new life experiences to it, and might actually deepen our understanding of that topic. Yeah. And so quite a few of this has to do with this second step of thinking, reflecting, introspecting, analyzing. Yeah. Okay, so Sure. Which is why? You count from 1 to 10 and start from 1 again. Counting is a technique, and although nowadays I never teach this technique, I never describe this except for as a joke. Yeah. Some people like counting because it gives them a mini goal, something that they can accomplish. Because it's not so easy to stay with the breath, 10 breaths, 1 to 10, without any distraction in between. It's actually quite difficult effort. Yeah. So some people find this task, people who are very task oriented, they find this, the breath, of course, is pretty boring if you first start. So when there is a task, they find it easier for them to engage with the breath. So in certain situations, it is suitable for certain people. But as you say, it's true, you can easily turn the exercise into a counting exercise. All about the counting. And after a while, you may have this experience where you're counting, but you're not counting the breath. This counting. 1, 2, 3. And the breath is already like, the breath is all over the place. And you are, part of your mind is already daydreaming about other things. But you're just counting. So it becomes dissociated from the breath. So that is one of the challenges. Yeah. Okay, so other cerebral conditions include what we're going to cover today. Cultivating a mind of calm abiding. So I'll explain more about this, but it's essentially a mind that is able to settle in meditation, become very calm, very focused, and very stable. Not easily distracted, thinking about this and that. So a mind of calm abiding is one of the favorable conditions that can help us bring about change. And then the subsequent week, we're going to look at another practice that's called, in Buddhism we always call it accumulating merit. Yeah. marriage, sometimes people think of it as spiritual money, you know. Right? Just as you have wealth, you can buy physical happiness, material happiness. So you have spiritual money, you can somehow exchange for spiritual happiness. Not exactly accurate, but marriage is accumulating a very positive kind of potentials or energy that really enrich your experience and allow the positive things within us to grow. It's almost like fertilizer like that. So accumulating merit is another favorable condition. Then the third one is purification. Sometimes called confession, although I don't like the word. It's about acknowledging our past mistakes, and in so doing, help us to let go of the past. Sometimes people can feel very guilty about things they have done, negative things they've done long time ago. And that weigh on their mind, on their heart, they can't let it go. Right? And that becomes an obstacle for change, for positive change. Because you are very much tied down to your past. So the practice of purification or acknowledgement of past mistakes help us to make peace with the past so that we can turn our attention to the future. Alright, so that is the third favorable condition. And the fourth one is having a source of inspiration. Something to inspire, something that we can reconnect with and help us to remind us why did we start off this journey in the first place. And inspiration also, usually from another person, also help us to awaken our own positive qualities. It's a very powerful thing, because sometimes one of the main obstacles is we don't believe in ourselves. We don't have confidence in ourselves. We don't believe that we can do it. We don't believe we can change. And in having a very helpful relationship with a teacher or anybody, you know, someone with good qualities, that can boost our confidence, you know, and help us to tap into our positive qualities and allow them to grow. So that is a form of inspiration. So these are the four favorable conditions that we are going to touch on as a way of preparing the foundation for us to be able to experience the Buddha's teaching. Now, all right. Any question? Say again. You can do it now. I mean, once you know. Oh. When you are meditating on something else, and that thought arrives, that thought is a distraction. Yeah, because it distracts you from what you are meditating. But there's no fixed answer. Some people do it regularly. Every evening they look back and think, oh, I've not been a good person today. I don't do it because it makes me very miserable. But so they can do purification every evening. That's one of the classic advice. Yeah, then other people make it like a practice. So for a period of time, they devote themselves to this practice. Then they stop and then they move on to other things and then they will come back to it. So there are different styles, different ways of doing it. Any other questions? If not, I think what we can do is I would like to guide you to do meditation first. So usually in this course, we probably do two meditation session if I can manage it. The reason why I want to start with meditation is because first of all, it helps you to settle. And I know I've been talking for half an hour to settle into the class. And this first session, I just also want to introduce some basic of meditation to all of you. I mean, I'm sure some of you have also experienced meditating, but quite often there are people who are new to meditation. So it's a good opportunity to touch on a few things related to meditation. And so this first meditation, I want to introduce some of the basic. First is, so usually I present meditation in three steps. Yeah. I haven't been teaching this for a while. First one is called acquiring a seat, right? Finding a posture, a seat that supports you in meditation. Second is called helping your body and mind to make transition. Because, you know, prior to this, maybe you're in the traffic, you've been working the whole day. So your body and mind are attuned to a different state. So it's good to take some time to help them to shift gears, you know, help them to settle into meditation. And this can take a long time, and it's not a problem. But most often we omit this step. We kind of demand our body and mind to just sit down and start meditating. So, of course, it's not going to happen. You're very anxious, you're very tired. All these things take time to unravel. Yeah. So the first step is deepening meditation. So having done the first two, then you're ready to go deeper into your own meditation. So let's try the first, the second step in this first meditation. So first, get yourself in a meditation posture. I'm a bit weird, I recommend people to sit on a chair and not to sit on the floor when they meditate. Because it's harder to sit comfortably on the floor to meditate than you think. Yeah. And most people end up with lots of pain in the body. Probably you're already feeling some pain. Yeah. And that pain is quite often due to the fact that you're not used to sitting on the floor. And there's some kind of, the posture is not as comfortable as it can be. And that pain is actually a distraction. It's not helpful. And because we have a modern invention called chair, you just put your back down on it, and all the pain disappears. How surprising, isn't it? You know, you don't look like a meditator, I know. So it's hard to keep up appearance. Meditating on a chair is always a bit like lower class citizen if you sit on this chair. But the reality is that you probably end up having better meditation experiences. Because a lot of time, beginners in meditations, they spend the most time struggling with the posture. Posture causing that, the knee pain and the lower back pain, everywhere pain. You know, so that's why I recommend people, when possible. Well, of course, if you are comfortable sitting on the floor, that's fine. But if you are not, then try to grab a chair. It's a bliss producing seat. You can meditate in complete comfort. You can go much deeper in your meditation, right? So, regardless, however, the most important is actually your spine. So you want to allow your spine to be upright in a natural way. You don't have to deliberately try to straighten it. Yeah? You just sit normally and as comfortable as you can be. So let's do that. I'll guide you. So take a few moments and just put your body in whichever meditation posture you think is most supportive and comfortable. Try to have your spine upright in a very natural way. No need to tense up your back muscles. Don't have to purposely straighten your spine. So your hands and arms, you can rest them in your lap or on your knee, whichever way that allow your shoulders to be relaxed. And I normally recommend people to just close their eyes completely and not to worry too much about it. And of course, at any point during the meditation, you can always open your eyes. And if you get bored during the meditation, you can open your eyes and just be a bit capable, you know, and just look around and see what other people are doing. That's also quite okay, yeah. So, take a few moments. Allow your body to settle into the posture you have adopted. So I will invite you to notice the sensations at the point of contact between your body and the cushion, your body and the chair, your body and the floor. See if you can notice sensations of something solid, firm, stable, maybe hard, maybe soft. Qualities we associate with the earth beneath you. So feel that the great earth is here to support your body in this posture, to hold you up, keep your body balanced, well supported, and safe. So once the body feels that it is well supported and safe, it can automatically begin a process of relaxing. releasing unnecessary tension, loosening up, unwinding. Gradually, in its own time, you'll come to settle down more and more comfortably into the posture. So this is the first step, acquiring a seat for yourself, for your body in meditation. So let's help our body and mind to make that transition into meditation. So we're going to make use of our natural breath. See if you can notice the sensations of the breath throughout the body. You may notice the breath around your nostrils. And feel the air flow in and out of your body. See if you can allow yourself to breathe naturally, no need to deepen the breath. Some of you may notice the breath at around your chest. You can feel the movement of your chest expanding and contracting with each breath. And some of you may even feel the breath in your abdomen. So this is not true for everybody, but some of you may notice the rising and falling movement of your abdomen as you breathe in and out. See if you can just notice some of the sensations of the breath. It can be at the nostrils, at the chest, at the abdomen, maybe at the throat, at the shoulders. Just become sensitive to this flowing movement of breath, going in and out, ascending, contracting, rising and falling. So it's perfectly normal to have your attention distracted elsewhere. You may find yourself thinking about this and that, or the sounds in the surrounding, other types of sensations in the body. So all these are quite normal. And what I will do is I will invite you again and again, just come back to the breath. Come back, take notice of the breath sensations once again. And just allow yourself to enjoy the flow of the breath going in and out. So coming back to the breath, don't feel that you need to tense up your muscles, you need to focus very hard. Not necessary. All you need to do again and again is find your way back to the breath. Find your way back to noticing the sensations of the breath. And see if you can pay special attention to your out-breath. So that you notice as you breathe out, quite often there is a sense of relief that comes along with it. A very subtle sense of relaxation because your diaphragm and the muscles of your chest, they will have relaxed in order for the air to flow out. So see if you can notice, especially your out-breath. And coming back to the breath, each time you notice your out-breath, I like to, in my mind, say the word release. We breathe out, we release carbon dioxide, we release the stale air in our lungs. We let it go. So maybe, as you breathe out and you say the word release, maybe some of the tightness or tension in the body, maybe some of them may also be released. They may flow away with the breath, leaving you feeling a bit more relaxed, more at ease. Coming back to the breath, releasing as you breathe out. You can also release the different thoughts, images, maybe memories, maybe some fantasies that pop into your mind. As you breathe out, you can just let it go. Let go of the image, let go of the words. And just allow yourself to once again be aware of the sensation of your breath. See if you can gently come back to the breath again and again. Don't need to feel frustrated. It's normal for the mind to wander here and there, to do this and that. And all you need to do is come back, reconnect with the breath sensation. And as you breathe out, see if you can deepen the sense of relief. Coming back to your breath, become aware of the breath sensation. And as you breathe out, remember to remind yourself to release. See if you can relax some of the tension in your face. Very often we store up quite a bit of tension, tensing the muscles of our forehead, clenching our jaw, or tightening the muscles around the arm. So as you breathe out and release, see if you can gently relax some of those facial muscles. See if you can let in the feeling of softness, a sense of ease and comfort into your face. So coming back to your breath again and again, and as you soften your face, as a reminder that meditation is not about struggling. You don't have to struggle against your body, you don't have to struggle against your mind. It's really about coming back, reconnect with your body and mind, and just helping them to release, to let go of unhelpful or unnecessary tension or tightness, set aside thoughts or images that are bothering you, just let them flow away with the breath. So coming back to your breath, take a few moments and just notice how your body is doing in your meditation posture. Notice areas of your body they might be feeling a bit more relaxed, more at ease, more comfortable. And also acknowledge parts of your body that might feel tight, uncomfortable, maybe even painful. So just notice the state of your body. And likewise, also notice the state of your mind. The mind fairly busy, lots of thoughts, lots of images, thinking about this or that. Or is the mind feeling very sleepy, very dull? And maybe the mind is a bit calmer, more still, more alert. So without judging good or bad, see if you can become aware of the state of the mind. Then we can dedicate and wishing that may anything positive that come out of this meditation, may they stay with you, may they linger in your body and mind to continue to benefit you long after the meditation is over. Okay, so that is about 18 minutes of meditation. Not a torture, right? 18 minutes is quite long, actually. When I first start, I said, oh, I'll sit for 45 minutes. I have no idea what I was doing yet. So I have a clock there. I sit down. I think I've sat for a very long time, counting my breath. Let me check the time. Only 1 minute. I'm not going to survive 44 minutes sitting there. You know, I used to do a very, quite a strong style. I'm not supposed to move, not even a finger. You know, to stay put, unmoving. Then later I realized that maybe I'm making things too difficult for myself. You know, create all these conditions, all these requirements. Energy meditation is more like learning how to settle down, settle back, let go of all the unnecessary things, release them. Then it becomes very enjoyable, no longer a kind of a competition. Yesterday I sat 40 minutes, can I sit 45 minutes today? It's not necessary to do that. And before long you will realize that you will start to enjoy your meditation. And then you start to naturally want to do more of it or give it more time if possible. The word enjoy is usually not paired with meditation. Right? I observe this. People say meditation is good. Nobody said meditation is enjoyable. I think that's a mistake. You should learn to enjoy your meditation. Then it's no longer a struggle to meditate. Let me finish this series on Netflix. Then I will meditate. But then on Netflix, you never finish, right? So you never get around to meditate there. But whereas if you enjoy your meditation, you automatically create a slot in your routine. That's when you come to do it. Because it's something that you enjoy, something you feel is helpful for you, and something that you derive some benefits from. So that's very important. Okay. Any question about that meditation? See? I used to joke that it's my karma. So I hope that it's clear, and that's what I say. It's also not necessary to follow what I said during a guided meditation. In fact, I give people a challenge. If you become really good at your meditation, you will be able to ignore what I said during the meditation. It's a challenge. Harder than you think, okay? The human speech, especially if I speak loud enough, because sometimes my voice drops. It's very hard to completely ignore and say, oh, come on, Wai Chong, shut up. I'm having a good meditation. Stop telling me to come back to the breath. Yeah. But if you, one day you said, I meditate, and then at the end of it, you say, did she say anything? I didn't hear a single word. Well, either you are asleep, or you are very deep in your meditation, to the extent that you can let go of sound, let go of human speech, and that is a very positive sign. And you should aspire to that, right? Aspire to be able to ignore the guided instruction during my guided meditation, okay? And when you manage to do it, please come and let me know. And I'll feel very happy. I'm very weird. People come and say, you know what? I didn't hear a single word you said during the meditation. I said, well done. See, I'm a very good meditation teacher, isn't it? Because you're deep in your own meditation, and that's what you want, isn't it? The instructions, or sometimes I call them recommendations, just to help you along. Otherwise, it felt like a bit difficult, a bit of support, some reminder, and say, come back to your breath. And then you say, oh, all right, okay, I'll stop my daydream and come back to my breath. I know you're planning a holiday, planning a murder, whatever you are doing, then this voice can bring you back to your meditation. Up to a certain point, then when you become good at meditation, you can do it yourself. Then that is no longer needed, and then you can let it go. Okay. All right. So there is a brief introduction to meditation, and so today I want to cover calm abiding, right, which is a product of meditation. Where as you meditate, you go deeper, you are able to help your mind to calm down from all those distractions, all those thoughts, all those worries, anxiety, all the anger, upset. You can calm the mind down. And the mind is able to abide peacefully and happily on whatever it is you are meditating. Could be on the breath, could be on the quality of loving kindness, be on a visual image. So whatever it is you're meditating, you can fully engage with it, and you can fully settle your body and mind on it. Okay? So it's actually a very wonderful experience. Why is it important as a favorable condition to experience the Buddha's teaching? It's because most of us, we have very busy minds. We get very distracted. Many things on our mind. Our mind is very cluttered with lots of stuff. Especially living in the modern world, we have a complicated life. Tax season, right? Tax is complicated, right? I still have to fill in my tax form. It's complicated, yes. So we have complicated life. And so it stimulates a lot our mind to think a lot in order to make sure everything is done. These days, the terms and conditions are like, especially small fonts. Then often more of the time we just agree. We have no idea what we agree to. But occasionally, as a contract, you do actually have to read through it, right? And then you say, wow, life is pretty tough. Always admire a lawyer to be able to think of all possible situations and scenarios to cover in the contract. Yeah. So we have complicated lives. It also means our mind is very complicated. There are many things preoccupying our mind. Right? And so, when we are so cluttered, it's very hard to find any opening or any space to let something different or new come in. Right? So in order to build new habits, you can understand how difficult that is. Because we are so preoccupied, so busy, that we tend to fall back on old habits, things that you've been doing for decades. Why? Because it's easy. Because you don't have to think about it. Sometimes you don't have time to think about it, so you just react. So that's why old habits get stronger and stronger. And it's very difficult to build new habits, new way of thinking, new way of seeing things. And this is not helped by having a very cluttered mind. Mind that when you say, okay, I'll sit down and try to study, try to think through clearly, try to meditate, and you notice so much distraction. Some of it is our own creation, right? You can subscribe this, subscribe that, and then, so there are many more things to preoccupy our attention, right? So that's why very important, especially in our modern living, to cultivate some quality of calm abiding, right? So that we have a bit of space in our mind, space in our heart, to let new experiences come up, new way of feeling, new way of thinking. I don't know whether you watch YouTube videos. I watch a lot of YouTube videos. Not a good sign, okay? On hoarding. People who hoard and say, this entire room only left one path, a narrow path to get to the door. Everything else is packed full of things. Have you seen a documentary like this? Are you one of the hoarders? Maybe your place is like that. When you hoard, and one of the things that I watch with a clearing up, you have no idea what's inside. The power of things, right? You know, you could have, once there was this show, this woman, a dead cat, the cat died among her possessions. And not only died, but squashed, and it was so long, it mummified. So it actually becomes this dry thing. Absolutely shocking. And she has no idea, because she has so much possession. She was just wondering, what happened to my cat? I was seeing my kids. Yeah. So that is how cluttered, that is a physical representation. You are so cluttered. You can't find the things you want. You can't do anything. You are limited to that one path that you left behind to go to the door and come back in. And this is a physical representation of our mind. When our mind is cluttered, there's lots of stuff, lots of worries, lots of anxieties and stress. Very little new things. So that's why it's important to take some time to cultivate quality of calm abiding, spring cleaning, clean things out. Immediately you feel better. If you're depressed, you just have to clean. And my friend said, yes, I must clean toilet. I said, don't worry. When you finish cleaning the toilet in your place, I was living in a Buddhist center. You can come to the Buddhist center and clean our toilet. Yeah? Then you won't feel depressed and you feel wonderful. So you feel a really nice, clean, fresh smelling bathroom. Wonderful. Good remedy for depression. You save us of money hiring cleaners. Yeah? Okay, so when we can clear things out, we create some space, then new things can come in, new experiences can come in. Right. Now, it's surprisingly difficult to get this message across. One of the reasons why we don't develop new realization or shift in perspective is we are too cluttered with the old things. Because I can understand why it's when I first learned of Buddhism, calm abiding, the state of mind, calm abiding, or sometimes called meditative concentration or meditative absorption, is again one of those things that people put very, very high up, right? Unless you go to the Himalayas and find a cave. And seclude yourself inside the cave, at least for 1 year, and you don't see anybody, no Wi-Fi, no mobile, nothing. And you sit and meditate. Otherwise, you can never get calm abiding. Have you heard this? Has anybody ever told you that? You're very lucky. These are just ideas we pick up that we, in a way, it's good to value it, to see that it's something, it's not easy to get. Often special condition. But sometimes we value it a bit too high, it's all like go higher and higher, always wonderful. But it also means that you are further and further away from it, right? So you get so far up, you decided that I guess no need to try that. There's no chance for me. So you don't bother, So I think that's a pity. Right? So I'm not saying that it's easy to attain. But I think we all can benefit if we cultivate a bit of calm abiding. I introduced you to my first slogan. The secret of happiness is to start with a lower standard. Start with a lower standard. You can always raise your standard. But I don't mean no standard. Just lower standard. Some people start with such a high standard. I don't know why they do that to themselves. And all they're doing is just beating themselves. Oh, I cannot focus on my breath. Yeah. I mean, of course you can focus on your breath. You can only focus on maybe half a breath. Right? Just breathe in and then you're off. Then come back and breathe out and then you're off. But it's still the breath, right? You know. So if you start with a lower standard, I can tell you it's the secret of happiness. It will be the path from smaller happiness to greater happiness to ultimate happiness. Yeah. You start with half a breath. Yeah. Wow, I've done really well. I can focus on half a breath. Okay. And say, oh, I did better. I can focus on the full breath. In, out, go up. Okay. Come back. In, go up. Right. Then you can progress to two breaths. In, out. I'm getting somewhere. Right. Half joking. Okay. So that one with karma binding. Yes, I know the actual state of karma binding might be a bit difficult to get. Because after all, they describe it as like, you should be able to sit meditation for the 4 hours. No toilet break, okay? Straight 4 hours, and you sit there, and you, actually, what happens is you don't feel time passing. Because you're so absorbed. If you don't know what I mean, think of playing computer games, okay? Right. I'm sure you all play computer games, right? You play until the train, you miss your stop or whatever it is, yeah? You're so absorbed in it that you don't notice the time passing. So actually 4 hours is nothing when you are able to absorb fully in your meditation. And you feel very nice. Absorption is usually accompanied by blissful sensation. And there's no distraction, no struggle, nothing pulling you here and there. The whole experience is like very wholesome, like completely fully present with your meditation, very enjoyable, no sense of passing of time, no sense of difficulty. So usually that's how people describe karma binding. We forget about the 4 hours, okay? I don't think you have 4 hours to spare anyway in your busy schedule. Yeah. Some people say, oh, I only have 15 minutes to meditate. I only have 15 minutes. Should I meditate 40 minutes and then jump up the last minute and get ready to go to work? I thought, well, what sort of question is that? And no, you meditate 5 minutes and then you have 10 minutes to prepare to go to work. Because otherwise, that 40 minutes, you will be spent saying, is it time yet? Is it time to go? I must get ready to go. Yeah. So you do 5 minutes and you have 10 minutes leisurely to prepare to go to work. But that is our mindset. So instead of aiming so high, aim something lower. Say, maybe, like, that's not 18 minutes, but say, 20 minute session. 20 minutes of enjoyable, wonderful meditation. Not too much distraction. No distraction, but not too much distraction. And you feel very settled. You feel quite relaxed. No pain, no physical pain. And you really enjoy watching the breath and coming back to the breath. Doable? I think it's quite doable, right? You already done 18 minutes, right? I don't know what you're doing, but 18 minutes, yeah. Okay. So if you lower the standard, it is quite possible to achieve something that is beneficial for you. And you will not be discouraged by the so-called lack of progress. And in fact, you will start to derive greater enjoyment from practicing meditation. Do you think I did a good job selling the idea to you? And I think it's actually very doable. One of the things is people tend to struggle in their meditation. They struggle. Come back to that. Naughty mind. Come back to the breath. I will beat you if you go away to the full of violence in their meditation. Or they get very upset with themselves. Why can't I stay with the breath? Why am I spending all this time thinking about this? This is also a classic thing when I taught meditation. The first thing they would say is, well, how's your meditation? Dangerous question to ask. Then they would say, oh, I can't stop thinking. Which is pretty normal, right? In fact, if they say I didn't think at all, I would worry for them. Thinking is a very normal thing. It takes quite a while to learn to be able to set it aside, to feel comfortable relaxed and at ease, that thinking starts to slow down and eventually stop. And so what people do is they struggle with their thinking and they do calm abiding type of meditation. Stop thinking. I want to stop thinking. Stop thinking. I have to tell them, the thought of stop thinking is the thought, right? The more you think about it, the more thought. No, so that's why, forget about this stop thinking thing. Just forget about it. Just drop it. Don't worry about it. Because if you keep thinking about stopping thinking, you are continuing thinking, right? And thoughts will stop when there is no longer any reason for them to arise. Okay? So, thinking is not an issue. And the main thing to do in a calm abiding meditation, which we're going to try out soon, is to remember that you come back to your meditation object. You come back. Okay? Don't try to stay with it. Don't try to hold on to it. Which is what people do. Because you try to stay with it, you try to hold on to it, you start a struggle with yourself. Every time your mind gets distracted, you feel that you have failed. You fail to stay with your breath. So nobody wants to be a failure, right? And then you struggle, come back and stay. That only makes you more agitated. That only makes it more likely that you will start to think. So instead of staying with the breath, forget about it. Okay? So in this next meditation, don't try to stay with the breath. Don't try to prolong your attention on the breath. Instead, you did what I just mentioned. You come back to your breath. And everybody can do that. Right? I mean, you may not want to do it. This daydream is quite nice, quite juicy. I think I would daydream, which is fine, okay? Right. But if you want to, then, oh, alright, I'll come back. Coming back is doable. Right? So you will be successful each time you come back to the breath. Now, whether you stay your attention, stay with the breath, it's not up to you to decide. Okay? If you're very agitated, you probably won't stay. You come back, you feel the breath in and out, and you're off somewhere. Who knows where you go. But no problem. Because I will say something. Come back to your breath. And then, oh, okay. You can come back. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in. Right. So you just have to repeat this process. What happens is, because you don't struggle against yourself, you don't get agitated, you don't get upset. Each time you come back, each time you release, you are slowly, slowly becoming more settled. You become more comfortable in the posture. You become more at ease with your experiences. Right? Of course, if you are very stressed, it will take a long time. Right? So just come back. Come back. Right. You're very stressed, right? That's why you're stressed, right? But no matter how, if you're patient enough, I used to tell myself, if I'm patient enough, if I don't give up meditation, one day your mind will give up. And then you will have this wonderful experience where it says, I'm really, something is strange. Why is the breath still here? You haven't done anything, right? You're not struggling, you're focusing, but the breath just keep coming and going. Oh, I suppose it's meditation, no? So, no effort at all. That's one of the important things to remember. A good meditation is effortless. No need to struggle, no need to work hard, no need to be good, nothing at all. It's just like something just happened. Nothing to do with you, it just happens. Breath come and go. And that's why it's so enjoyable. Think about computer games. A game that you like is one that you feel you can play confidently. A bit difficult sometimes, but not too difficult. You're very enjoyable, right? Almost effortless. Only look at people. That's what I do on the MRT. I don't have games. So I look at other people's games or other people's Korean drama. Or Chinese drama these days. So, game is pitched such that it must not be too easy, otherwise you get bored. It must not be too difficult, otherwise you have too many setbacks. it becomes too unpleasant for you to play. And if you get it at the right level, you will fully absorb in the game. Because it's very entertaining, very engaging. So the same thing with meditation. Don't struggle too hard. Come back gracefully to your breath. Just deepen the sense of release. So that you help to maximize pleasant sensations coming out of your meditation. Before you know it, you start to enjoy your meditation and your body and mind starts to slowly better, become calmer, you start to abide in the meditation. Okay? You ready to give it a try? Okay, we see whether we can achieve calm abiding, okay? Okay, just as before, take a few moments and just find a comfortable, supportive posture for your body, one that allows your spine, your back to be upright in a natural way. So no need to deliberately tense up your back muscles to straighten your back. So just allow it to be upright in a very simple, natural way. Rest your hands and arms in your lap or on your knees or whichever way to allow your shoulders to be relaxed. Might be easy to just close your eyes completely so that you do not have any visual distraction. Just take a few moments and allow your body to settle into this meditation posture. Give your body plenty of time to unwind, to loosen up, to release unnecessary tightness and tension, to find its way into your posture. So just as before, we're going to use the breath as the object of meditation, as an anchor that we can return our attention to again and again throughout the meditation. So start by becoming aware of sensations of the breath throughout your body. You may notice the breath at your nostrils, or maybe at your chest, could be at the abdomen, can also be at other places such as the shoulders, the throat. Breath sensations can be felt at almost all parts of your body. And see if you can tune into some of them, so that you are aware of your in-breath and your out-breath. So remember, the instruction is to come back to the breath. When you notice your attention is elsewhere, engage with other things, see if you can invite your attention gently and gracefully to come back and reconnect with the breath sensation so that you can feel and be aware of the in-breath and the out-breath. And see if you can pay special attention to your natural out-breath. Breathing out, there's a natural sense of relief that comes along with it. So in your mind, as you breathe out, you can say the magic word, release. As a reminder, remind your body, as you breathe out, it can release some tightness, some tension or discomfort. And likewise, as you breathe out, you can remind your mind, you can set aside some of those thoughts or concerns, some of the images, memories or daydreams. Can put them aside for the time being so that your full attention can come back and rest on the breath. A good place to start to help our body to settle down is with the face. We have more conscious control over our facial muscles. So if you notice that you have unconsciously tensed up the muscles of your forehead, or muscles of your jaw, or muscles around the eyes. So as you breathe out and release, see if you can gently release those tensions. Gently allow the whole face to feel softer, more at ease, more comfortable. So remember, all you need to do to come back to the breath, if your attention has wandered off, maybe to thinking, maybe feeling a bit sleepy, all these are quite normal reactions. All you need to do in the meditation is to come back and reconnect with the breath sensation. And as you breathe out, see if you can allow yourself to deepen your sense of release. Allow the body to settle more comfortably into the posture. Allow the mind to come back and settle on the breath. Coming back to the breath, see if you can do it as effortlessly as possible, as gracefully as possible. No need to struggle, no need to be upset with yourself, no need to feel frustrated with the state of your body or mind. All you need to do is very simple. Return your attention to the breath, reconnect with the breath sensation, and as you breathe out, deepen the sense of release. Coming back to the breath, sometimes our mind may have wandered off for a long time to a very far off place. And that's quite normal. All you need to do once you become aware is to choose to come back to the breath. Come back, reconnect with breath sensation, and start again. The calm abiding mind is a creative mind. That sounds a bit contradictory, but when the mind is not preoccupied with many things, lots of space and doing almost nothing to see, that space allows new ideas to come up, new connections to be made, new combinations. So it's actually a very creative state. Sometimes when we're very busy, very stressed, and we get very locked into like very limited way of thinking. Option one, or option two, or option one, or option two, option one. But then when you settle back into calm abiding, you suddenly realize, oh, there's option three, option four, five, six, seven, eight. There's lots of options. But because we are so busy and so caught up, and quite stressed out, our thinking becomes very limiting, very rigid. So calm abiding, which doesn't involve thinking, so we set aside thinking, we allow the body and mind to settle back, to just be. And yet, it is actually very creative. And when you get used to it, then you slowly help the body and mind to settle more and more. You start to trust your intuition more. There's space for intuitive understanding, ideas to come up. You know, preoccupied with all sorts of noise and talking, and so the little voice can be heard. So that might be helpful sometimes. So I would think that if you want to be more creative dealing with the life situation, the way to go is not to think more, try to analyze more, try to control more, but to release that and to settle that into the calm abiding. Then you may find that you can tap into your natural creativity. Which is why all those creative people, now and then after a while they need to have a sabbatical and go off and do something different. Because if you keep doing the same thing, your thinking gets very locked into that way. And then it's very hard to break out of it. You need to change your scenery, try to empty the mind out. Okay, any questions? Very persistent. Just silence. Which is fine. I hope it's clear. So that is, the first point I want to present under this preparing the foundation for experiencing the Buddha's teaching, which is calm abiding. So, I introduce you to another slogan related to meditation, which is regular practice is better than irregular practice. For some strange reason, people think that meditation, you have to do it daily or you don't do it at all. Daily, every day, Monday to Sunday, no break, or you don't meditate at all. And I'd like to point out that there is many different types of regular practice. You do it once a year and you're very special. Valentine's Day. You do it once a year, regular practice. Very good, regular. You know, 10 years, you do 10 times, no? then you can do it, like exercise like that. Do 3 days, rest the rest of the week or whatever. Different combination. Alright, different combination. Other than daily meditation. There can be 2 meditations per week, 3 meditations, 2.5. You know, like, sometimes you say, oh, I don't want to go party, so. Save it for next week. Yeah. I'll catch up next week. So regular practice. Anything that you do regularly has a more impact on you than irregularly. Irregular is, I think the moon, the stars are aligned today. I'll do it. Yeah. So irregular. Nobody knows when you're going to do it. Not even yourself, right? But the second line is important. Irregular practice is infinitely better than no practice. So if you cannot do regularly, cannot even do once a year on the same day, you do it irregularly. I don't care how irregular you are, you just do something, okay? 5 minutes in the toilet, it's fine. Just do it. The toilet is a good place, actually. very private. Yeah. But don't do the breath. Don't do the breath. Okay? This irregular practice is better than no practice at all. It's to highlight that if you want to bring about some positive change, and if you think that meditation can be helpful, then please by all means do something. Whatever that works for you, and you can always change, and you can always modify it, and not to feel bad about your irregular practice. I'm very forgiving of myself. You know, like, Sunday, I think I was sleeping. I won't wake up early to do my morning practice. Just forgive yourself and carry on. Yeah. So see if you can remember regular practice. Regular practice is more powerful because the regularity helps to familiarize you. You always use the same place at the same time of the day. You know, do the same similar type of practice. You build. It's much easier to build up the habit. Yeah. But if you cannot manage that, no problem. Try irregular practice. One day you do breath, and tomorrow day, breath will be boring, I'll change. I'll do mandala meditation, whatever. You just made it up. You do whatever. At least you do some practice, it will have some effect on you. And so, I'm trying to make sure you have no excuse to do no practice. Yeah. Okay. Regular practice is better than irregular practice. Irregular ones are better than no practice. Right, so I leave you with that. Thank you very much for your attention. I'll see you next week. Okay? Or you can also irregularly attend my classes. Yeah. Hey, good night.